Fortunately, no lives were lost, and remarkably, there were very few injuries. But as we've seen on TV, and we've heard on the radio, and seen in the newspapers, the damage is extensive. And the economic losses are estimated to be in the order of $4 billion. And of course, beyond the economic cost is the human cost that arises from the experience of that traumatic event, and that our colleagues in Canterbury will be living with that for many years to come. Now, in response to the overwhelming interest in that earthquake, Victoria University and Geological and Nuclear Sciences, GNS, have organised this combined lecture today to give us a better understanding of the earthquake and the geology that gave rise to it. These are early days, of course, and the information we have to date is the best available. So I'm very pleased to see today that in spite of the understandably extremely busy workload, we have with us Professor Martha Savage from Victoria University Institute of Geophysics and Dr. Ken Gledhill from Geological and Nuclear Sciences. I'm delighted they've been able to find the time today to give us this lecture. Now, Professor Martha Savage studied at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and obtained a PhD in geophysics in 1987. She joined Victoria University in 1997 and was promoted to professor in 2009. Her area of expertise is seismology and its relation to tectonics and earthquake hazards. Dr. Ken Gledhill is the GNS Project Director and Section Manager of Geohazards at GNS Science. Ken studied at Waikato University and obtained his PhD in geophysics from Victoria University in 1991. We're pleased to have Ken as an honorary research associate at Victoria University. His area of expertise is earthquake field studies, seismology, and geophysical instrumentation. Now, this lecture today has been a group effort, prepared with the input from numerous GNS staff and Victoria University staff from the Earth Sciences School, Tim Little, John Townend and Ewan Smith, most of the geophysics masters and doctoral students, two fourth year seismology students and a second year student have all combined to present or to collect the information to put this presentation together today. It's truly a group effort. Martha and Ken will speak for about 45 minutes and will answer questions at the end of the lecture. I'm told there is one technical detail, and that is if people attending this lecture are on the mezzanine floor, if they have any questions that they would like to ask, then they're going to have to come down to this lecture theatre to ask them. Sorry about that, the technology is only working one way. The order of presentation will be that Ken speaks first and then Martha. So, ladies and gentlemen, a warm welcome to Ken Gledhill. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, David. I would just like to reiterate that we're the front people here for a huge team that are out there doing a lot of work. And this is a pretty significant event for New Zealand. And it's going to have an impact. So I really want to, right at the beginning, actually dedicate this talk to the people of Christchurch and the Canterbury region. I have a daughter down there who is homeless because of this event, and I'm sure that many of the other people in this room and around will actually have similar experience. New Zealand is just a small neighbourhood. So what I'm going to do is kind of take you through the response part of this event up to a certain point, and then Martha's going to take over and add some detail around some of the science. Now, it's hard to separate those the response from the science. They're all well and truly intermingled. So this is... I won't spend a lot of time on this. Basically, it's what I've just said. We're going to sort of share the talk. There's a tag team, and then you can have questions afterwards. So we'll get right into it. At this time, on Saturday morning, and it seems a very long time ago now, I was actually asleep. But very soon afterwards, my pager went off. And I went out and was faced with what one dreads if you're in my position, because I run the team that responds to these beasts. And what I faced was the prospect of a really big earthquake in New Zealand near a city. At that stage, we didn't know that nobody had been killed. We didn't know a lot of the details. In front of you there are some of the details. It was relatively shallow depth, it was over magnitude 7, and it was within 40 kilometres of the centre of Christchurch. Miraculously, as David has already said, we had no deaths, 3 serious injuries, or maybe there's a few more, and maybe 100 injuries in total. But the number at the bottom of that page is the one I want to sort of underline that I think people in Treasury and other places are struggling with putting what the exact figure is. The Earthquake Commission covers a lot of that cost for us as far as the rural, the housing sector, but that's a big number, $4 billion. So just to put this earthquake in context, New Zealand is the plate boundary between the Australian and the Pacific plates. Under my feet, 25 kilometres down, the Pacific plate is grinding under the Australian plate. By the time you get to Christchurch, things have changed and it's two continents sliding past each other but also pushing together quite violently, obviously. And then that whole length of the Alpine Fault. And then the plates go the other way around, with the Australian plate diving under the Pacific plate. That's New Zealand. This animation is about a decade of earthquakes in New Zealand, and you can see those features. So you're looking under New Zealand, if you like, and that veil, the big veil you can see, is that plate under my feet here. So that's under the North Island, New Zealand, right down the east coast. The bit in the middle is basically the Alpine Fault, and that's what we'll talk about some more later as far as that part of the country. And then that reverse subduction in the South Island, you can see, is the Little Veil. So that means that we have a long history of major earthquakes in New Zealand. I'm not going to read through all these. They're on our website. You can go and look at your leisure. But the most important one for us at the moment is this one. It's only just happened. And these are only the major earthquakes since European come to New Zealand. In the background on this map is the New Zealand Seismic Hazard Map. And the darker, more frightening colours shows higher hazard, and the lighter colours shows less hazard. And it won't take you much to work out that Northland is probably the best place to be. Superimposed on that is the last, and I'm sorry we haven't had time to update this, but is the last 50 years or so of earthquakes in New Zealand. And the first thing you would say is the background, so, you know, it hasn't borne out what we're saying. That hazard map is built upon the geology, the known faults, all the seismology we know about, and then we put a background size earthquakes in there of about magnitude 7.2. So an event like the one we've just had is in our seismic hazard model, but at a relatively low probability. If I now then push back in time to 1840, you'll notice that New Zealand has a lot of earthquakes near urban centres during that period. The urban centres were pretty small. And there has been other earthquakes in Christchurch. I won't go through all of these. If you look at the list at the top, what you see is that there was a couple around the 1870s that were quite close into Christchurch, quite damaging in Christchurch itself, but not felt very far out. And then you had earthquakes like the North Canterbury one, that you probably have seen that famous photo of a fence that is offset, and of course the Arthur's Pass in 1923. So okay, I'm going to project myself back to when I staggered out, having tried to wake up. I turned my computer on, and the first thing I did is check the front page of the GNET website, and this is what I saw. And I had trouble believing it, basically, because what that's telling me, once again, you know, the blue colours are lighter felt, and this is what my instruments were telling me, right? You can see that as you get near Christchurch, the colours sort of get a little bit more frightening. That was telling me that near Christchurch somewhere had been a very large earthquake. And so the first thing that I did was talk to the people in Civil Defence and Emergency Management and tell them what I knew at that stage. We've had a big earthquake near Christchurch. This is serious. And within 10 minutes or so, we had a reasonable location and we published it on the website. And then people started reporting what they were feeling. And this has gone on for the last week, and over 6,000 people have so far reported what they felt during that event. A lot of them in Christchurch, but there was actually a bit of a lack of reports for a start from Christchurch because the power was off in a lot of the central city. One of Martha's students got that data and contoured it up, and it's quite interesting. It actually shows the felt effect area, but it also shows probably where the earthquake happened. So we're still reasonably early on. We know we've got a big earthquake. We know by now how big it is, 7.1. Well, we were saying it was 7.4 for a start, actually, but we'll gloss over that. And within an hour or so, we could work out what we call the focal mechanism. We haven't seen any trace on the ground at the moment. All we've used is the seismic waves that come out and get recorded on our huge number of instruments. And using those, we can say that it either broke an east-west trending fault or a north-south trending fault. Okay? That's where we were at. As we know now, that it was the east-west trending fault. The other thing we knew quite early on, and Martha will give you a lot more information on this, is it was a complex event. It just wasn't a simple earthquake. We knew that quite early on. We actually talked to our colleagues at the National Earthquake National Earthquake Information Centre in Golden, Colorado, who do worldwide earthquakes, and we talked to them about what we thought was going on. The point I want to make about that plot is the east-west or north-south, okay? Turned out to be east-west. So we're back to the time of the earthquake, and I just want to talk a little bit about the styles of the damage. And you'll have all seen plenty of photos, so I'm not going to sort of hammer too many points, but hands up those that saw a lot of bricks in all those photos. Correct. Old brick houses were extensively damaged. This is actually in the epicentral area. And as we're working with the Ministry of Civil Defence, this is one thing that the science tells you quite early on. All the information for a start was coming from Christchurch. None was coming from near where the event actually happened. And it was people like me communicating with my colleagues at Civil Defence, saying, you know, has anybody been out in the drive in the countryside just to see if there's anything's going on? Because that would have been where people felt it strongest, potentially. So we're back in Christchurch City. I think this is a well-known photo. Things are damaged to old buildings, a lot of historical buildings. My wife and I had been down in Christchurch the weekend before, and I suppose we were a little bit surprised walking around about how many of those old brick buildings are still were standing. And this is the real classic that always happens in an earthquake of this size. It's the kind of chimney through your roof scenario. The amazing thing in this event, nobody was killed under one of these. That is pretty amazing. Now, the time of the morning had a lot to do with it. And this is the other big story of this earthquake, but again, well known. Colleagues more than a decade ago at Victoria University and GNS had looked at studies of the soil conditions around Christchurch, and that we kind of know that this liquefaction happens. And this is kind of what liquefaction does. I mean, if you shake a bit of sandy soil like this, it basically becomes a liquid, and then it fountains out. And if you have built even a very new building right on top of this, and you haven't done deep piles down to stabilise it, what happens is the house just slumps and buckles. So you've seen the photos of quite new houses that were very badly damaged. Liquefaction. And then it basically causes a flood because all this water comes up out of the ground. Here's just a photo of what we call sand boils, which you kind of, just a huge amount of material comes up out of the ground.